I'm Margaret Wappler, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over the pop culture we all love to love. I'm subbing in this week for Guy Branum, and with me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are digital strategist Winter Mitchell.
Hello, hello, Margaret!
Hi!
Hi!
How you doing?
Good, good to see you.
All right, good. Academic and DJ Oliver Wang.
How are you, Margaret?
Very good. How are you, Oliver?
Good, good, good.
And our special guest, comedian and former advertising writer, Asterios Kokonos.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Hey buddy.
Good. Asterios, I have to ask you.
Sure.
Because your name is very Greek, so you are Greek.
Yeah.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being like psycho proud, 10 being like not at all proud, where's your family on Greek pride?
Well, first off, I would flip those numbers because
yes,
it's like 10 should be the best.
You're right.
Because Greece is awesome. Greek people are awesome. Our food is awesome. We've never done anything wrong politically.
That's right.
Yeah.
Never really have. It's
no,
true.
Absolutely not. Our economy is as sound as it's ever been.
Wink, wink.
Exactly. You know what? I'll tell you how into being Greek I am and we are. I still remember where I was. I'm not kidding. When I found out that Dukakis did not win.
Ooh.
And I
Dark
remember
Dave.
Like, yeah, I
really loved him.
He was a cool guy. He really knew how to drive that tank.
Yeah, man.
He had normal sized eyebrows. Loved him. And I remember putting my head down on my desk like I was sad.
Yeah.
Wow.
We were all sad about that.
Did his whole thing get thrown over because he stumbled on that question about his wife being raped?
Yes.
Remember that theoretical question that he just like couldn't answer, which makes sense because it's like, what an insane question.
Yes.
For
those
Dukakis.
Of you who might be too young to remember this, during a debate, he was asked like a very pointed question, very like violently phrased.
It was a death penalty question. Right.
Yeah, exactly. He was like, if you came home to find out that your wife was raped, wouldn't you want the guy that did it to be given the death penalty?
I don't remember this.
Yes.
But like, look, to be fair, Dukakis was like, nah.
It maybe wasn't his finest moment.
Massachusetts liberal. He stuck to his ideological guns on that one. You know?
Yeah, because if there's one thing politicians from Massachusetts do is they never change positions. Just look at Mitt Romney.
Exactly.
Oh my God. Every week we start the show by taking a question from a listener about our own pop culture tastes. This week, since it's Black History Month, I want you guys to tell me, what is your favorite film character played by a Black actor or actress that doesn't fit in the typical trope of slave, whore, drug dealer, sports player, angry mother, etc.? We could go on and on. Winner.
Because I'm Black?
Sure. Because you're charming.
Because I'm charming. This isn't on film, but I love the show Black-ish. The show Black-ish really resonates, and it's not so much Anthony Anderson and Tracy Ellis Ross's performances, which are fantastic and outstanding. It's the kids. The kids really remind me of my sister and I growing up and just being caught between both of these worlds where you are definitely Black and your parents are reinforcing your Blackness every single day, but you're also coming back to them and saying, I just want to sit in my room and I just want to read bop and listen to Nirvana. Please leave me alone. So they cover that terrain really well. The writers are really strong and it's based off of Kenya Barris's life, the showrunner. So I just think that they, you know, the show is very successful, and I know why. It's because they really tap into sort of like a lot of this new generation, new Blacks is what they would like to call us. But I'm rejecting that notion.
I have a question, which is, do you think it's easier to find an example of an African-American character you like on television than it is in the films?
Yeah, because I always think about like Cuba Gooding Jr. Like Cuba Gooding Jr. and Regina King. Regina King, I guess I would have been my other choice. I mean, she played, you know, a strong, powerful mother and wife to Cuba Gooding's character in Jerry Maguire, which is also in my top 5 favorite movies of all time. But she also got into people's face and had to let people know what's up. And you always need that in a movie. I feel like in television, there's a lot more room for a character to grow and expand and shift. And I think we'll see more of that as the years roll on. And, you know, we start declaring our domination over the world. Finally.
Good luck with that.
We're working on it, man.
I was going to ask the exact same thing because I was able to think of so many more examples from TV than movies.
Yeah.
Asterios, what about you?
Well, I mean, that's why, because I didn't read the question that closely, and the character I was going to bring in was Eric LaSalle's character, Peter Benton from ER.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Wow, good one.
Yeah, just because I remember...
Clap, clap, clap on that.
Thank you. I just remember being a kid and thinking, like, this is the coolest doctor in the ER.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This guy's cooler than George Clooney, who I'm supposed to think is cool.
Exactly.
And he's, like, running around, saving lives, hooking up with this British chick... Like,
you're so right.
In the pilot to ER, which, and by the way, like, every TV nerd is always like, the best pilot ever is Cheers. I think the best drama pilot ever is the pilot to ER, because it's just this great 2-hour movie where just
that
a bunch
is two
of.
2 hours?
Yeah, yeah. Whoa. It was a backdoor pilot.
Okay.
And so, like, and in it, like, Eric LaSalle, like, has to do his very first surgery because he's waiting for a Dr. Anspaugh to show up. And he,
what
and
a it's fan. Like, a,
yeah, I was a huge fan. I remember, oh my God, I remember doing this. I remember going to Radio Shack as like a 12-year-old, buying this thing that converted, power in my family station wagon so you could plug in like a plug into the station wagon.
Yes.
And then on a long trip, I brought a VCR and a TV.
Jesus Christ.
Along with me, plug them both in, and I watched the pilot to ER on VHS cassette.
And I are homies.
Yeah.
I would have done the same thing. I remember I brought like my Nintendo on vacation once.
Yeah.
To Disney World.
That's awesome.
I don't give a shit about Disney World. I want to play Nintendo too.
Well, Nintendo's better than Disney World.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Do you think, didn't know that.
Do you think you could give someone stitches just from watching ER? Like you'd have a reasonable shot at giving decent stitches
to
someone.
I could put a stint in.
Kidding me? Absolutely. Okay. I could intubate someone.
Finger stint.
Yeah.
Tracheotomy.
Yeah, sure. Dude. Yes.
Watched all that awesome stuff.
If you need a stint, you need to call 1-800-WIN-STINTS. I'll hook you up.
New side
overnight.
Business. I like your side hustle.
Side hustle.
Oliver, how about you?
So this is really random. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the favorite, but one of the first things that popped into my mind was Thandie Newton in the Chronicles of Riddick. And can we just back up and just acknowledge that for the briefest of moments, like blink and you would have missed it, but really Hollywood did try to make Thandie Newton sort of like an it girl.
Oh, yeah.
Like she was in the Mission Impossible film. Of course she was in Crash. Less we talk about that whole movie role, the better. And I think by the time she did Chronicles of Riddick, like the star had kind of already been in decline. But for a movie that was not great, but is kind of rewatchable for its not greatness, I mean, I guess you could sort of call it a cult sci-fi hit, but she basically gets to overact as much as she wants, chew scenery, and wear these incredible, fabulous outfits. And it's like, was it the best role she was ever going to do? No. But is it a really enjoyable role? Absolutely. Like playing like part of the underverse. I forget what the alien race was in that film, but she kind of got to play like a nefarious, sinister, plotting person. But in a way that I was like, I love watching her because she is just going for it in every scene. So.
I do feel like she's one of those actresses that's going to get a very great role a little later. Like everyone thinks about her. Everyone remembers her. She had that it girl attachment. You guys don't think so?
No, I agree with you. Like, I just think that, full disclosure, I worked for her agent while she was a client. And she just, I think she's one of those people that just beautiful on screen,
yeah,
and just really pulls in sort of like that energy. But after The Truth About Charlie, the Wahlberg movie that was the remake of
Flowers for Algernon or something,
a Charade. It was the remake of Audrey Hepburn's Charade.
Okay.
I think that was like that weird era right pre SAG strike where it was just like that was one of the few films that came out that just sort of show that the industry is just shifting really fast. And now we're about to go on strike. Mm. And I think she got like slapped in with all of that. I mean, anybody who'd made a movie basically before the strike and it tanked and they had been tanking and it was like in that weird era, they've never fully recovered.
Right.
So I think she kind of was like that secondary act that just never. She's gorgeous. I mean, she's beautiful. She has really great presence on screen, but
Thandie Newton, I'm rooting for you.
And then she was in a Tyler Perry movie. Then she played a crackhead. So then I was like, whatever.
What were you going to say, Oliver?
Oh, no. I was going to say that I feel like Zoe Saldana came and basically took her spot.
Yeah.
Ooh, you know? Ouch. Ooh. Oh, that stings, Sandy. I'm sorry. What I was going to say for the question. What I was going to say for the question is that I think the character that I was most charmed by lately was Danielle Brooks playing Aziz Ansari's agent in Master of None. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Like, she Absolutely. Was so phenomenal that I really want them next season to write her in a lot more.
No
like,
doubt.
Do a whole Curb Your Enthusiasm and just have that yes. woman on hand yes. all the time so that she can just, like, drop in and be hilarious. I think for film, like, I automatically thought of Don Cheadle's character in Boogie Nights because he's such a sort of, like, gentle, adorable lamb of
Absolutely.
A human.
Oh, God. What like, he's selling so the stereo.
Yeah.
Or with the Black Jesus
yes.
thing.
Yes. Like, 100% just so charming. And it
God.
Really, like, Don Cheadle, that was, like, I think the first time for me that he became, like, on my radar, where mm-hmm. I really, like, if I see him in a film, I will go see it or check it out. Like, Hotel Rwanda was another thing that, like, I mean, that's such it's such a heavy movie, but he is just such a gorgeous performer yeah. that he lifts it up.
Yeah.
And people okay. are really liking the trailers for the Miles Davis biopic.
Oh, yes.
That he
yes.
Miles.
Strong, I know. Dude. I'm stoked about that.
Yeah. At first, I was annoyed when he got replaced. When Tarrant, I don't know.
It's not his fault.
What?
He knows
the
what
Iron
we're
Man
talking.
Replacement,
the Iron
right?
Man replacement. Oh. It's not his fault. Terrence Howard is a jerk. But the thing about it is that I was, like, annoyed because I felt like, how are you going to start a... I hate that. It's the same thing with Aunt Viv and Fresh Prince. It's like, how are you going to go this far down the road and then swap somebody in like they're interchangeable Negroes?
I know.
Then I was like, wait, Don Cheadle is so much better in this role. So much stronger. I hate how needy he is for a suit, but I still love him.
Don Cheadle does a good job, but every time I look at him, I just feel bad for Terrence Howard. But then again, you read all these headlines about Terrence Howard where he's like, I admit to crimes.
Yeah,
and then you're just like, oh,
the
how
best
bad
reputation.
Do I feel about
I'm not feeling that sorry for him.
He's got empire. Like,
exactly.
He's doing fine right now.
No,
he's doing
I know.
Fine.
Yeah. Look, I'm saying I'm of two minds about
okay.
it. Like, we've had three Hulks. I guess I don't feel bad about that.
Right. I feel like bad about Eric Bana. I feel like Bana could have gone into the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, but what's his name is so good now.
Ruffalo is amazing.
Chubbo guy? That guy's great.
Ruffalo is fantastic.
Love that guy.
And I don't understand why Ed Norton was ever a Hulk consideration because I don't see him as Bruce Banner at all.
You don't see him as like a skinny picked on nerd?
No. Yeah, I could totally see that.
No,
and then
I could give that guy a wedgie.
No.
And I will. Where does he live?
Where does he live? Let's knock on his door. No,
Hollywood Hills.
I thought Eric Bana was hot.
Thanks to Bryce Lee Wynn in the Facebook group for that question. And if you've got a question we can use to start the show, please submit it through the Facebook group or Reddit. Coming up in this week's show, advertising and sponsorship now that we've all seen the Super Bowl. Plus, we'll be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Asterios.
Oh, well, I'll start off. So my favorite thing that can happen on a set happened, which is on the set of The Hateful Eight. The Hateful Eight rented like an ancient six-string guitar, like a
19th
folk
century,
piece
yeah.
from the 19th century.
This and, is so heartbreaking.
And they gave it to, what's his name, Tron guy.
Kurt Russell,
who I will call Tron guy.
Okay, Tronman. Sure.
They gave it to the dude.
And, he's not Tron.
Huh?
Kurt Russell's not
Tron. Oh, no,
Tron.
He's not.
I was
he's
confused.
Flynn.
I was like, was he
I'm sorry.
Tron?
I didn't.
Wow.
I didn't know that
get
you.
Get out.
Which guy? Am I thinking of Jeff Daniels?
Serious. Things might
not
get
Jeff
a little
Daniels.
Rough here
it's
for
not
a moment.
Jeff Daniels.
I'm sorry I confuse all white people. Excuse me. It's about time they got their
Jeff
comeuppance.
Bridges.
All older white people with a face that tells a story look the same to me. And I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, look.
Jeff Daniels'
I honestly
story
thought
is
someone else
different.
Was going to set this story up for me, so I didn't prepare a bunch. I don't have all the information in front of me. But look, long story short, my favorite thing that can happen on a set happens, which is someone thought that a really expensive guitar was just a prop and they smashed it during a scene for dramatic effect, and now we've lost a priceless artifact forever.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But wait, I have to say that the best part of that article that you linked to is the talk about how Jennifer Jason Leigh's face of horror was not acting because she knew that it was the sacred rare guitar. And she was like, oh my God, what's happening?
Yes.
That's going to win her an Oscar.
That's going to win her an Oscar. Well, and she's been waiting. And all she needed to have happen was someone to destroy a rare guitar.
She's like, damn.
Yeah.
I guess that makes it worth it if she gets an Oscar out of it. Right?
Yeah, I hope
for
so.
Her. Working for 40 years and then they break a guitar.
Right.
And
turning in, like, great work pretty
I'm
frequently.
In the next Marvel movie, so thank you, old-ass guitar.
She's going to be Kurt the new Russell. Captain Marvel.
Yeah, new Captain Marvel. By the way, I'm not blaming Kurt Russell because he's a national treasure. I'm not blaming Edward James Olmos because he's a national treasure.
You need to stand
by
him.
Blaming the goddamn key grip or production assistant or AD or whomever didn't say.
But they switched it at the last minute, right? Wasn't that the case that they were supposed to switch it at the last minute?
Okay,
and somebody didn't. I mean, you're right. There's still their fault.
The prop person is literally. I'm telling you, ever since Tarantino lost the woman that was his right hand because she passed away, everything's gone to shit. And this is one situation where I know she would have been like, this goddamn guitar is older than is from slavery.
It's older than Kurt Russell.
And is older than it's older than seven Kurt Russells. And so don't let this shit get smashed.
It's like tree rings.
What are we running right now? Ages. YouTube videos as feature films? This is ridiculous. That guitar could still be here. Rest in peace, guitar.
Yeah. To the guitar.
To the guitar. All right. Miss Winter.
So the O.J. Simpson miniseries started last week on FX, and let me tell you, goodness gracious, great balls of fire. This is a goddamn good miniseries. And here's my only problem. Let me get this out of the way immediately. Young people don't give a shit because young people don't remember. And I know that FX thought, like, with the random Kardashian references that would pull people in. Not so much. It's really for people who were
sentient during that time?
Pretty much. Who could, like, make decisions and make sandwiches. So, like, anybody from seven to, like, make personal decisions with assistance or sandwiches. Okay. So, like, anybody from, like, eight or nine up is going to enjoy this show. Cuba Gooding Jr. plays OJ. John Travolta plays Robert Shapiro perfectly. David Schwimmer, with that Schwimmer money, he doesn't need the Schwimmer money, so he can do whatever he wants, plays Robert Kardashian.
Wow.
Selma Blair plays Kris Jenner. They have a woman who looks just like Nicole. They have a Kato. They have everybody, all the key players. Sarah Paulson plays Marsha Clark. Courtney B. Vance plays Johnny Cochran. I'm just telling you, it's really hard to talk about this case with people who weren't there. And so many people that we kind of interact with these goddamn millennials running rampant and taking over everything, they don't remember.
I hate them.
So they don't remember, like, what was... I love you.
I love you, too.
You pay my bills.
You guys buy my consumer products.
Exactly. I take that back. There's a very much... It's a episodic... Every single episode really covers, like, that key point. So there's definitely going to be, like, a glove episode. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the way the show sort of, like, picks apart, it's produced by Ryan Murphy. Scott and Larry wrote it, did a fantastic job, and did 3 years of research. It's very compelling. It's just weird to see something that you watched incessantly over and over and over again, day after day for 2 years straight, and then see it from the perspective that you didn't really have, which is to be right there, like the fly on the wall. This is a very fly on the wall.
Isn't
scenario.
The second episode the car chase?
Second episode is Chase Tomorrow.
Whoa.
Is it campy? Because the trailers, it was hard to tell because of the casting. It's sort of, you see Travolta, you kind of want to assume it's
Dude.
Campy. But no, it's not.
No.
It's straight.
You're going to love it.
Okay.
You will love it. And okay. I really hope you love it. And you tell me next week if you don't. Okay. Because the reality of it is that it lends itself to camp. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about all the different cross sections that it touched, and you don't even really think about that. Sports, race, sex, Hollywood,
murder,
the Naked Gun films.
He was Nordberg.
The movie came out that week. I'm sure they're gonna talk about it. The week that the week the chase began. So it's very much true. As far as I remember, it's true to the scenario that occurred. But just the way, no spoiler alert, but the way the show ends, the first episode ends is that. What am I spoiling?
Yeah, he's
the OJ Simpson story.
He's off golfing now.
No, he's in jail.
He's in jail.
People for stealing his own shit, which I think I find highly ridiculous. No, the end of the first episode shows him escaping the Kardashian household with AC, who's played by Malcolm Jamal Warner.
Whoa. Yeah, this
I'm
is
so
like the casting on this sounds brilliant.
Even the girl with
it's
no
lines. It's a dream team of
actors.
Even the woman that plays Paula, his girlfriend at the time, looks just like the similarities are ridiculous.
How come Fannie Neaton couldn't have gotten a role in this?
Yeah,
I mean, come on.
Who was she going to play?
Who's her agent now?
I don't know. I have no idea. But the very end of the episode, I'll just get through to say this really fast. The end of the episode is him escaping the Kardashian household because he knows he's about to go to jail.
In the Bronco.
And it's just like, it's just showing that scene hurtling down the 405. It's just, that was like, I got chills.
I was going to say that I think everyone of our age group roughly remembers where they were when that car chase was going on. And I remember I was working in an Italian restaurant that I worked at in high school and part of college, and the entire kitchen staff, the entire wait staff, the entire bar staff ran out and just crowded around the TV and just watched, and like all of our minds were blown.
I want to point out where I was, because
I
think I'm only like a couple of years younger than you guys, but not by much. But we had like a school assembly. Like, we were to find out the verdict. We were
we did not have
school assembly to watch the verdict?
We didn't have a school assembly to watch the verdict, but everybody was sort of on alert.
Because,
like, half
alert.
The kids were going to walk out.
Exactly.
Half the kids were ready to get.
My little tiny school in Long Island, which had, like, almost no kids in it. Like, the entire school had 250 kids. I was one of the only people there that was not, like, super white. And I could even pass, so who cares? Like, what am I going to do? Also, I couldn't lift a desk. But they brought us all in the auditorium, and they wheel in the TV.
Shut up.
I'm not kidding.
That's usually for, like, presidential assassinations or, like...
I know.
Crazy.
I'm raising this because it's weird.
That
I'm
is
not
crazy.
Telling the story because it's normal.
All the teachers thought, well, this is a teaching moment.
Yes.
This is something we can frame conversation about race.
Race.
We can talk about race.
Of American justice.
My favorite story, I tell this all the time, I was sitting with my grandfather, God rest his soul. This man fought two wars, Korea and WW2 and Storm Normandy. The coolest guy in the world. And we were sitting there watching the finals, and I'm sitting at his feet. We just ate dinner. We're just watching everything. And they cut into the game and start showing this. My grandfather's just watching this for like 2 minutes, doesn't say a word, as if nothing had happened. And then I look up at him. I'm like, whoa. And he goes, are they going to turn the game back on or what?
He's like, look, I've seen it all.
Exactly.
I've seen it all.
Exactly. A man who did two tours, he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Can you put the game back
on,
please?
He's like, whatever this football man did, I don't care. Okay, Oliver, lead us in to the ultimate I'm all about.
Yes. Beyonce and Formation.
Woo!
So I don't want to say too much, if only because... I just like watch the, if you haven't already watched the video, watch the video. There's nothing that there's no kind of gloss that I can put on it that would remotely do it justice. I'm just going to pluck out a few things out of the ether. I think the video is gorgeous. I think it's shot really well. I like the parallels, whether they're intentional or not, with a lot of the stuff that Kendrick Lamar did in All Right. I mean, there's a lot of things that mirror it, least of all kind of the Black Lives Matter sort of subtext that's with there. But just that one shot where she's just nodding her head in that outfit and she's like, I mean, just the cinematography was fantastic. And then coming out into the Super Bowl with a all-female Black Panther, like, tribute drumline.
The world's sexiest Black Panthers.
And, you know, with flames shooting off in the background, just an amazing entry. And I'm just thinking about this fact that she drops the video out of nowhere the day before the Super Bowl. She basically everyone sort of expected she was going to steal the Super Bowl, you know, halftime show from Coldplay, because pretty much anybody could do that from Coldplay. But she capitalizes on that moment and then announces her world tour, which you see in an ad after halftime, like flawless in terms of just thinking about how to put all of these things into motion and executing. This completely flawless execution. Now, what I want to know is, at what point did someone at the NFL decide, we're going to get Coldplay for reasons that make no sense. Mm-hmm. And then like an hour later realize we've made a terrible mistake. How can we recover from this? And maybe we can get Beyonce to do it. Oh, I mean, I don't know how it came in. Did she already have the tour plan and would use, you know, decided to capitalize? Like, I really need to know the story behind like how that all came together. But
I really want to know. I really want to know. The moment they made the announcement, what was it, 6 months ago, Oliver?
What, mm-hmm. for Coldplay?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a while ago. It was like, yeah, whenever, like 3-4 months ago. Sure.
Yes. Okay.
I think it was in December.
Right.
And everyone was like, what?
I don't want to see them.
Right.
I don't want to fall asleep. I want to keep the amp going.
It's 2015 at that point. Like, who wants to watch Coldplay?
No, and I'm not taking away anything that as amazing as they are as
Yellow.
A band. Look, Parachutes is a great album.
It's a great album.
But I don't want to watch you during the Super Bowl. Right.
I have to say, I liked Coldplay. I thought they did.
In general or at the halftime show?
At the halftime show. Here's why. Because I think that they very graciously and very generously framed the whole thing. Okay. I don't think it's easy for somebody like Beyonce to come in. Let's face it. The only person that Beyonce could not upstage at this point is Adele. Adele's kind of the only person.
Whoa,
seriously.
Yeah, but could you imagine Adele doing a halftime show?
Right. But I'm just saying she has such star wattage right now. And she planned it so to a T, as you're pointing out, that like anyone would fucking fall kind of to the background when she's coming out in Black Panther regalia, right? So I think that they actually were quite gracious and generous about the way they framed it, including rolling into the whole like, let's look back at previous performers.
But this,
I just got to defend them. I think people were mean about it. I think people were really crappy about being like, oh, they're not part of the squad, like when Bruno and her and Chris Martin were lining up.
Where the announced act was upstaged by some surprise.
Except
but that's why I don't think it's really truly about them being headliners. I really think they're a framing. I think the way that we're thinking about it as a headliner is mistaken. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
I think
they're more upstage.
Missy?
She's the one I remember. Look, I thought Missy was great because it was like, oh, Missy, I missed her. She's fantastic. She's still really good. But then it totally ended with Katy Perry riding like a giant firework, like a million miles up in the air, singing flawlessly.
Yeah.
Like, it was just incredible. Like, Katy Perry was incredible.
She was incredible. But the thing about...
Because there's so much spectacle.
There's so much spectacle.
That's why I'm watching the Super Bowl.
No, but there wasn't that much...
I'm not a shrinking violet here watching Masterpiece Theater. Want to see some spectacle, hey!
No, let me tell you something.
I'm listening.
Yesterday was low on the spectacle because she wanted you to hear the message. Everything about what she did was straight up strategic.
Yes.
She had a brilliant media plan and she executed it well.
Yes.
I thought we were talking Missy versus Katy Perry.
That was
a year ago. I'm still ready to argue
with
that.
No. That was a year ago and we already talked about that a year ago. You got to back it up and go through the library on Pop Rocket. So, but Beyonce, like, I'm surprised nobody's talked about the fact that she had bullet shells on her arm.
I know people did.
That was a Michael Jackson nod.
Well, it was a Michael Jackson nod.
Right.
And then, like, the police took that, like, some certain police organizations.
The Fraternal Order of Chicago Police.
Got up on their haunches about that.
Let me tell you something. It is a humongous, huge risk for someone of her caliber to go out to however many people that were watching us today, let's say 75 million people, 80, because I know that it shrinks every year, to go out there and put your political agenda on the table. You know, we've had a tit, we've had implied masturbation, and we've now had someone say, stop killing Black people. And by the way, this message was brought to you by Beyonce Knowles. I mean, it was a huge risk.
Yes.
And it paid off because now I've never seen women of color.
Is it a huge risk, though?
It is a huge risk. That was the blackest shit I've seen in the on a national stage in like years. I've never, Afros, Black Panther, Malcolm X, Beyonce, again, you're doing the Super Bowl. You just did the Super Bowl two, three years ago.
Right.
So that is very Black. It was very, very, very Black. And I just thought to myself, damn, you're powerful.
Yeah.
And guess what? You're owning it. And also, by the way, you're telling us to own that shit too.
thank you. And I didn't I never thought I would thank Beyonce for that, because I wasn't thanking her for the feminism argument when Beyonce Platinum Edition came out. I was like, thank you, Beyonce, for acknowledging we're women, we have vaginas, and we have to do shit. But then I was like, you know, but now I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Owning it. And that's what we needed right now. You need, you know, Kendrick can do it on his level because he's Kendrick Lamar, but he's still a rapper. He's still in a certain specific genre. Mm-hmm. She is Beyonce. She can power the entire world with a message, and she did it. And thank God.
All right, Beyonce, we're obviously rooting for you too.
Bowing.
You and Thandie Newton.
Yeah, you and Thandie Newton.
You're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk advertising and sponsorship after this.
You guys, I'm so excited to introduce to you my new baby, Getting Curious with Jonathan Van Ness. This is going to be a really fun look at things that I find curious, whether it's a menstrual cup, it might be the Romanoff family, it might be fracking, it could be Carly Fiorina. I don't even know. Who knows? It's going to be whatever I think is interesting. I can't wait to bring it to you guys. We're going to be bringing in content experts. I'm going to be learning the things. It's only going to take about 30 minutes for you to expand your baby brains with me and have a super fun time. So I can't wait to see you on our first episode of Getting Curious.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Margaret Wappler. With me in the studio are...
Oliver Wang.
Asterios Kokonos.
And Winter Mitchell.
Very good, guys.
We know our own names.
You guys are top notch. In 2016, do you guys want to guess about how much Super Bowl ads cost for 1 second of airtime?
Oh, per second? I'm going to guess $5 million per 30. So
pretty close.
Oh, what was it?
It's $150,000 per second to air and about $4.5 million for a 30-second spot.
I went over, and the Price is Right, I would have lost.
Yeah, that's right. In 1967, at the first Super Bowl, a 30-second ad cost $37,500, which is about $266,000 now in today's dollars. So it's jumped up quite a bit.
Mm.
So we're no Sterling, Cooper, Draper, and Price, but we're going to try. We're going to convene right
they added
now.
They added a Mitchell at the end of that.
We're going to talk about the best, the worst, and the most opioid-influenced commercials of the Super Bowl. So, Asterios, as our resident Don Draper for this episode, tell us a little bit about the process of getting an ad ready for the Super Bowl.
Oh, wow. Well, I've never worked on a Super Bowl ad, so I couldn't tell you that. But I do just want to say something in general, which is I only watched the Super Bowl for the ads. I didn't know who was playing the Super Bowl until, like, Friday before the Super Bowl.
Sure.
Like, I just didn't. I don't know. I just didn't. And but then all the ads got dumped onto YouTube in like the weeks and the days before the Super Bowl.
Which seems really strange. Isn't the whole point that you wait to the Super Bowl to watch the ads? Like, why would people do it ahead of time?
Yeah.
Explain this to us, sir.
Well, I mean, the thing is, this was the first year I can remember that I just didn't watch it. Because I was like, well, I saw all the ads already. I saw them all on YouTube.
Right.
The biggest question I had was, who's going to be the new Colonel Sanders? Because I love Norm Macdonald, but I found out that they were going to, like, Doctor Who style, regenerate the Colonel into a new person. And so I was like, I'm going to watch the Super Bowl, and I'm going to find out who the new Colonel Sanders is. And then that morning I wake up, and on Facebook there's a trending story that's like Jim Gaffigan to the new Colonel Sanders.
Oh,
and I'm like,
man.
Well, now I'm not going to watch the Super Bowl at all. This was the only reason I was going to watch the Super Bowl.
Because that was a spoiler for you. That was a spoiler.
Yes, I'm absolutely not kidding. It was a spoiler for me. And I was like, well, then forget it. Then forget everything. Like, I saw the Helen Mirren ad in advance. I saw a lot of these ads.
So why is it ahead of time?
Why are they all putting them up early?
Look, I honestly can't speak as an expert because, like everybody, I got
here?
My job. Why are you here? Why am I
this
here?
Is my
am I being
show?
Paid? I'm leaving. Where's the pizza?
You're being paid in beer.
Okay.
In 2 bucks
I stole from Jesse. I can only guess. Oh, and by the way, like, I got my job in advertising much like everyone else did, I had a friend in advertising who was like, there's an open job. Like, that's how, like, everybody gets their, like.
I've done copywriting, and it's always been through friends.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. Yeah. Copywriting is you know, the main focus. And it's the kind of thing where everyone's always like, oh, do you go for college? Do you go to college for advertising? Do you do this for advertising? It's like, no, you know a guy named Dan Bilek who, like, couldn't fly to San Diego one weekend to play the new XCOM game for 2K Games. Like, so they flew you instead. Yeah. And, like, you went. It's just, like, that's how it works. But anyway, like, my uneducated guess is that one company leaked their ad to try to get that pre-Super Bowl media cycle. Now, this is what companies used to do. They used to do the trick where it was like, our commercial was rejected from the Super Bowl. You guys remember that? Where it was like, PETA makes an ad that's too hot for the Super Bowl. Yeah. PETA was totally going to spend $4.5 million on airtime, but CBS wouldn't let them because it had too much hot lady sex in it. Like, that used to be the way that
GoDaddy did that. Yes.
That used to be the way that you seized essentially what we would call, you know, free organic media because, you know, you send that commercial to the press, you're like, they wouldn't run it. And then in the run-up to the Super Bowl, the press plays your ad and they ask a bunch of idiots the question, like, is this too hot for the Super Bowl?
Oh, my God.
But, like, I guess that story's played out. So what you do now is you just put it on YouTube a couple of days before. So one company did it, and then another company did it because they didn't want to not have theirs leaked. And then another company did it because they didn't want to miss out on that pre-Super Bowl media cycle. And then before you know it, the entire Super Bowl ad can't – every ad is on YouTube. And so this was the first year I didn't watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah. So it's not appointment viewing necessarily anymore.
No. It was the only thing I was going to watch for was the commercials.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in it for the commercials. So, I mean, in your expertise, how long is the lead time typically where an agency is working on a Super Bowl commercial?
I have never worked on a Super Bowl campaign, but I mean, you know, it's coming. Like you know, if you're,
I mean, is it like a year in advance? Did the clock just restart where now we're working on 2017 ads, or is it not that far in advance?
Well, here's the thing: if you are advertising during the Super Bowl, you probably did it last year.
Okay,
and so it's like you know, it's, I mean, it's like the holiday season. You know, you're going to have a holiday campaign. You know, you're going to have a New Year's Eve.
But they switched something because Steve Harvey had a commercial completely making fun of the Miss Universe pageant, which that only happened
a couple of months ago.
That was only a couple months. That was like a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
So
somebody slapped that together fast.
Real fast.
Honestly, I went to film school and all my knowledge is useless because you can like shoot the prettiest looking commercial ever in like someone's garage and edit it together on your laptop and have it on the Super Bowl the next day.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just like, the world of production is really sped up where you can make something gorgeous immediately.
Sure. But how does that affect the media cycle? Because budgets are created and planned and thought out well before first quarter. So like conversations about Super Bowl budgeting and all the other stuff definitely happen at the top of the fourth quarter. So, I mean, just to be able to book a talent and have them present and have the concept ready, I mean, that's like, and then you've got the holiday to account for, that weird 10-day time span where people don't have the ability to work, or then maybe they have to work through it. I don't know. Like, I'm just wondering, like, do you just work through Christmas and New Year's just to make sure this happens?
I mean, most ad people I know have the most insane hours.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a job for anyone who wants to lay around.
Sure.
Well, I worked in television too. I feel like every industry says, like, we have to work late because it's blank. Like, I remember, we have to work late because it's television. We have to work late because it's journalism. We have to work late because it's advertising. It's like, everybody works himself to death. Like, it's America. It's terrible.
Right.
Yeah.
You were saying before that you were looking forward to watching the ads for the Super Bowl. And it's only because you're not interested in the sporting event. You're interested in the advertising event.
Yeah.
Is this for ad people? Is this kind of like the biggest event of the year? Because you see what different agencies bring their A game. Yeah. Is that part of what it is?
It's the only time. Can you think of another time of the year you're excited to watch commercials?
Mm. Nope.
You know, I was reading about the Oscars compared to the Super Bowl. Uh-huh. And the Oscars is like half the price to advertise during it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But the people who watch the Oscars apparently buy a lot more of the stuff advertised. Mm-hmm. So people, like when you split it per viewer, you're actually paying more per viewer. Right. Because that viewer will turn around and buy things. And, right. and like you were just gesturing, they got money. Yeah. Which with the Super Bowl,
well, because everybody watches
it's like every
Super
schlub,
Bowl.
Right? It's like who
well,
knows
every
who's
rich
watching
guy
it.
Too, but everybody, it's you know, it's the most watched television event of the year,
right?
You
yeah.
know,
because it's live and you don't know what's going to happen,
right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what are you going to watch the Super Bowl the next day on DVR?
Yeah.
No.
So let's talk about a few of the specific ones.
Sure.
To all of you guys, Super Bowl babies, what did you think?
Loved it. Loved it. Loved it. Nailed the fuck out of it. Nailed it.
It was weird and a little uncomfortable.
I agree.
But I made this. I'm gonna reuse a joke I used on Twitter during the game. Trojan should have bought time after that. After
Hell
that ad.
Oh my God. They should have. It would have been genius.
It would have been genius. If only they had known. But it was just weird. Like, I don't need to think about people fucking after the Super Bowl.
Well,
like,
it was so reverent. You know what I mean? Like the choir,
least,
like singing
least, you know
as
what?
A choir.
At
like,
least Seal's
what?
Getting some work. So, you know, yes. that's not so bad. Yeah. But I thought it was weird.
What about the older man driving to David Bowie's Starman?
Right.
On a cliff.
Now, did they already have that song queued up? Like, was that pre-Bowie's death? But more importantly, that
didn't
guy.
Didn't you know somebody was going to use David Bowie, though?
Probably. But most importantly, that person did not seem like someone who should be driving a car.
It
like,
was a little worrisome.
At night, on a ridge.
By the way, I really feel like, just like last year, I feel like last year there were some dark ads, and this year just continued that theme of like
oh, yeah.
darkness. Mm. There's just a little bit of dark sidedness in some of these ads.
Yeah. I did appreciate that ad, though, for telling a kind of subtle story. Like, we all were
about
like...
dementia?
No, well, kind of, yes. I mean, that's a real concern. I mean...
Right.
Alzheimer's, it's a growing illness, more and more of us, along with opiate-influenced constipation.
Wait, we got to talk about the two different ads that involve bowel movements.
Yes.
But on the opposite sides, because one is basically opiates. I mean, it's opiate-induced constipation, and they had a diarrhea ad.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, they just need to get those two together, and everything's
solve
solved.
Solve each other's problems.
Do I need to watch a walking colon on television?
No. And I was really troubled by that, by the way. I was like, why? Where am I? Like,
well, it was also like a happy foot, sad foot issue of like, does the colon have a colon within itself? Do you know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
We're like, I'm talking about this sign for everyone who doesn't live in LA where there's this foot at a podiatrist's office. It like is it either shows a happy foot or a sad foot, and the foot has feet. And it's very confusing.
I have to tell you guys, I was just grinning so big when I heard Oliver talking about these colon issues that I took a selfie of myself smiling super big because I was like, I probably look crazy right now. I'm smiling so big. And I'm going to send it to you guys so you can put it up on Twitter.
We're going to put it up on the Facebook. We're going to put it up on the Facebook group.
How about Mountain Dew's puppy monkey baby?
I kind of liked it. I mean,
I'm going to ride hard for it. I really liked it.
That one.
All of the Mountain Dew Extreme ads have tried to be, you know, way over the top. And this is just something like in a fever dream someone pitched in an ad campaign.
That's why
meeting.
I liked
They're
it.
Like, they went
it was
with
just,
it.
Yes, it was just straight up silly to the max.
It was.
Like, there was nothing about it that was trying to be profound or whatever.
It was surreal
which is
enough
why
to
it was
work.
Profound.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
How about Budweiser's Helen Mirren No Drunk Driving ad?
No.
I mean, I will say this. Like, most people lecturing at an audience about not drunk driving would come off as a total asshole. And I think she actually was pretty witty and fun and sassy, and it worked.
I needed more British, like, swear words that would be okay with American FCC.
She said pillock.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, right. Pillock?
What is a pillock?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's something
British. But, like, tosser.
She didn't say
fanny. Yeah. You know, or, you know,
whatever. Wanker.
Bollocks.
Yeah.
You know, Amy Schumer and Seth Rogen, love them both to pieces.
That was good. I like that bit.
Yeah, love them.
Michael Pena?
Yeah. Michael Pena is great. Michael Pena. Paul Rudd, I'm sorry, is everything. Okay?
And it's true.
Everyone likes Paul Rudd.
Him and Beyonce, basically, are like, just unstoppable forces.
No wrong.
And Amy Schumer managed to get a big dick joke onto, like, national television and pass the censors.
Hats off, Amy Schumer. What about the Snickers William Dafoe as Marilyn
Monroe? I'm sorry. That was my fucking favorite.
This is very different.
I liked it a lot.
Wow. I know. That was my
favorite.
Because
I'm with you. I didn't really like it. What did you guys like about it?
I just like the fact that I'm in this very, because this new millennium is scaring the shit out of me. And plus, I just turned 36, so I feel like I'm just like hurtling towards death. But I just like the idea that we still have to put it into people's mind. There was an era that was fabulous and fantastic, and people were gorgeous and glamorous, and you didn't know a lot about them. Mm-hmm. And you can still bring that out there, and it still resonates. So, like, just to have a Marilyn Monroe ad, by God, like 60 years almost since her death, and still sort of have that resonate in a very important time, I think that's cool. And I think Willem Dafoe is, you know, he looked good in that dress.
Yeah. He has good muscles.
Shape. Yeah, he's in shape, man.
I think in terms of stunt casting, the Christopher Walken closet gag was better than Dafoe. But
especially him working with the sock.
Yes. Yeah. He should just do a
wonderful thing with the sock.
He's an easy win. Dafoe is where the smart money is.
Unlikely pick, right?
Exactly. Mm.
How about this Doritos baby in utero ad?
Worst ad.
Yes. Jesus Christ. I don't need that. I don't need that. Your
just
baby
like,
snatched out of your snatch
like
to get
disrespectful.
A Dorito?
Just like disrespectful.
Doritos aren't that good. Stop pushing it. Every year for the last 36 years of my life, you've pushed and pushed. We get it. They're addictive. Stop. Even Ruffles has taken a seat. Stop.
Oh, stop, God. Yo.
We get it.
Yeah, it bugged me. I did not like it.
Pushing, man.
Avocados in space.
I actually think it was decent, but until it got to the jingle, and the jingle kind of ruined it. But it was funny.
I love the whole like walking through the hallway where there's like Scott Baio.
The dress.
That was, yeah.
Yes.
Scott Baio was on TV last night?
Yes.
Just in a glass case.
He's aged
in
well.
An avocado commercial.
I mean, maybe only in
yeah, he's aged well.
I love him.
Yeah.
I wasn't paying attention.
How about Drake with T-Mobile?
That's fine.
Missed that.
You saw it.
Yeah. Brian, I like the Brian Huskies in an ad. I thought that ad was fine.
Yeah.
The ad that kind of freaked, that I loved, the Pokemon ad.
Oh,
which was weird.
There was a lot of movie trailers during the bowl.
Yeah, there was
the
Captain
like
America.
Was that even a movie trailer? What? I don't even know what the Pokemon ad was advertising besides
20
Pokemon.
Years of Pokemon.
Yeah.
It was just a franchise ad.
Oh, okay. I thought that was like a movie coming out, and I was like, oh.
It was wicked epic. Right. No, it was just, this is the 20th anniversary of Pokemon. There's also a new game coming out called Pokemon Go, which will allow you to walk around in the real world and hunt Pokemon in real life, and you'll have to literally travel.
Oh, you said hunt. I think he said hump.
That's what I thought he said too, and I was like,
hunt.
Wow.
Hunt.
Has
Ethan
the Pokemon
hunt.
Franchise taken a turn?
Yeah, well, for the sexy. That Pokemon ad was super great, but speaking of movie trailers, there was the Captain America Civil War. There was a commercial for that, which looked good.
It looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
You know?
The Hulk and I, Ant-Man, Paul Rudd. You love Paul Rudd. We all like Mark Ruffalo.
One of them was in that. And I'm smart enough to know that. So I didn't give a damn about that.
So something that's interesting is that the NFL apparently has like a rule that they're not going to have any kind of like protest ads during the
But didn't
game.
They have Church of Scientology last year?
They
and
had
this year.
Scientology
and
this year. But apparently they wouldn't allow that one ad that was protesting the Redskins, like the name changing, like they, you know.
Well, of course.
Pay money.
But I thought it was interesting that one of the political ads that came out, I mean, not political, but just socially minded ads, I should say, that came out during the game was nomore.org's domestic abuse commercial where you see
totally
the
necessary.
Two women texting.
Right.
Yeah. What did you guys think of that?
I think the second year in the row. I mean, it's because the NFL has an image problem when it comes to their players and domestic violence. So, yeah. I mean, it's sort of – I'm glad they did it. It feels – I don't know. I don't want to be cynical about it, but it's sort of like – it's because the NFL has a problem with players and domestic violence.
Yeah,
so,
it makes you wonder, like, okay, they're obviously giving advertising time to this, but – is it going to affect any kind of policy or any kind of decisions in the NFL?
Go ahead, Winter.
No, I was going to say, can we talk about, like, we're going to forever shit on the future. I think we're at that point now in our lives.
Whoa.
The artist?
As a secretary, what?
No. Shit on the future of just, like, I think we're going to become more and more disinterested in what is being fed to us. I think everybody noted... I know Asterios did as well. Like, I literally
went to a party for 2.5 quarters and bounced after halftime. And I usually, I mean, like 5 years ago, I would have been like, it would have been an entire day. Mm-hmm. I whittled this down to like 2.5 hours max. What about ads from the past? Because I have a nostalgia for the eras before when I was younger and sort of wrapped with attention. But I always think about like Michael J. Fox's Pepsi commercial,
yeah.
Britney, Beyonce, Shakira, and David Beckham's Super Bowl ad, Cindy Crawford, obviously. I mean, you know, Pepsi and Coke just always, forever, they are holding tight to this brand. But are there any sort of nostalgic Super Bowl advertisements that sort of remind you or make you, you know, miss sort of like that era of having like that event experience? I don't feel like these are eventizing the bowl that much.
Hmm. What do you guys think? Because I mean, honestly, I went and looked up old ads, and in a way, they just kind of wash out of my brain,
sure,
like pretty soon after the whole thing. Like, I don't know if I'll remember any of these ads. Although when I did look at the old ads, the one that really like triggered major memories was that whole like, "What's up?"
Oh, yeah.
Remember that
thing? I was going
to
say, right.
That was just like an animal that didn't stop. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, I remember the "What's up" ads. I remember the Bud Frogs. Mm-hmm. I remember like a lot of those funny ads from
Ray
when
Charles.
I was a kid. Yeah, that's right.
The California
Waisins.
You
got the right one, baby.
You got the right one, baby.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Wow, that was a thing for, like, months.
Yeah.
But I think this goes back to Asterisk's point, which is that, you know, when you watch, if you're watching the Super Bowl, you have the anticipation to watch it for the ads.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Then it heightens everything. When
sure.
things leak ahead of time, you watch it a few times, you're get your laughs out. It kind of just – it really dilutes the impact of it as a cultural artifact in that sense. So, I mean, I thought this year had some decent ones, but are any of them – yeah, are we going to remember them a year or two from now?
Fuck no.
I mean, yeah, probably not.
And I don't know
if that's the ad or if it's because we now get everything ahead of time and there's no surprise factor anymore.
But aren't they looking at their model and going, look, our model's not working. Like, what are we doing?
It is working. We're talking about it right now.
We are talking
about
it right now.
We just gave every single person.
Oh, shit.
We gave
scrub
everybody
that. Bleep
free
all that.
Media.
I'll bleep all
we
the
gave
band, the
everybody
brands.
Free
By the way,
media.
I won't be buying any of this shit. I don't
well,
need
that's the
ketchup.
Thing that I thought was so interesting about that Oscars versus Super
yeah.
Bowl statistic is that, like, are people really buying the stuff
no,
from Super
I'm
Bowl
not
ads? That's the big question.
We'll do commercials. Well, I mean,
avocados.
But the thing is, you were probably going to buy them anyway.
Right.
I mean, like, you could. The question is, like, can you think of a commercial that has ever influenced a purchasing decision? Well, and if you can't, I mean,
Pepsi.
Sure.
Pepsi,
tell me.
Throughout the 80s, it was Michael J. Fox was my favorite. Michael
yeah.
Jackson's my favorite.
Yeah.
Cindy Crawford was beautiful. Britney Spears. Like, I bought Pepsi because it was like, well, obviously they pitch Pepsi, but there's never been anything. Except for GoDaddy domains, there's never been anything that's been advertised during the Super Bowl that I've actually immediately gone out and said, you know what, I think I'm going to look into this.
But let's touch in real quick on the other side of sure. the advertising sponsorship situation, and that's product placement in movies. So can you guys talk about some of the most egregious product placements that you can think of, either
yeah.
it being really successful or it being just a hot mess?
Well, see, I think product placement actually works better than a traditional ad. I mean, think about the Wayfair sunglasses in Top Gun.
Mm.
They weren't cool until you saw like a movie star wearing them.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, it's like everybody wants those glasses. Like my dad had those sunglasses.
Now, was that actual product placement? I mean, did Ray-Ban pay a promotional fee in order to have that used, or was that not? I would just assume, and maybe this is me being naive, that the you know the art director, stylist, whatever, they decided, you know what would look right here would be this particular kind of sunglasses, and it just happened to take off.
Oh, that's a good point.
I don't know.
I'm not sure if they paid or not, but I know that their sales went up by 40%.
Right.
Ray-Bans, yeah.
You know, like in some short amount of time. And then the U.S. Navy got right. huge recruitment numbers that year from Top Gun.
I mean,
obviously, they didn't pay.
I had been thinking about this question because I think that there was a point at which, especially in the 1990s, that product placement became... It started to creep into the extent that you had, like, Wayne's World, for example, making a whole joke out of it.
I was totally going to yes. right. bring that up.
And making it deliberate. But it's sort of like, yeah, that's funny, and maybe it's sort of subversive, but it's sort of they get to have, you know, they get to eat their cake, whatever, the whole that
yeah.
idiom goes. And to me, I feel like it's so ubiquitous. We notice it when it happens. It's like, that's kind of lame because it's so ubiquitous. And it's only when they draw attention to it, which they still get the benefit from it, that we feel like it's better because they're just making it so naked, as opposed to like when Michael Bay sneaks in like 20 different kinds of product placement things without drawing attention to it.
But they don't talk about the here's the biggest problem for me. And I think that they really need to tie this in. You need to talk about the experience of the product, not so much just because the product is the product. Like, I would love, I was walking down the street in San Francisco this weekend and somebody had a Four Loko can. And I said, somebody brought this Four Loko here. That's so ratchet. All these ratchet people in San Francisco. But I knew Four Loko and I immediately associated it with ratchet people. So like, you have to talk about the experience of a product. So I would need to know that an Audi and its performance versus just it's an Audi and it looks hot and it has like a really nice dash. And that's something that we've lost. You know, back in the day when you had like car commercials, it was like, this car does this, this car does that, this car can go this way. And that was all you cared about. And then you look cool in it. Now it's like, you look cool in it, but just go with it. You look cool in it, assuming that we already know the performance.
I was just thinking the most recent James Bond movie when mm-hmm. they introduced the car, Ben Whishaw's character who plays Q, he actually runs down the spec sheet on the car. I'm just thinking, like, why are you doing this? Doesn't feel like natural dialogue. It's like, oh, you're just selling, you're helping to sell the car because
no,
it was
but they
an
should
Aston
show
Martin
it
would have
rather than tell.
Well, it's always interesting when it's built into the story or the characters, right? Like, I was reading about how the first Sex and the City movie has some enormous amount of brand placement. Like, there's like 68 brands just like flipped throughout the movie. And I think that's partially because Sex and the City, in addition to being about Sex and the City, it was about capitalism. It's about shopping. It's about like getting stuff. And I think James Bond has that same kind of message.
Watch.
Yeah. Here are these American and British items made within an inch of perfection, and we want them.
But like, for example, his suits are of Tom Ford, but that never gets mentioned. But people if you look at it and you're like, I want to look like James Bond, you'll do the research to figure out that it's a Tom Ford suit. But it's not like James Bond is like, nice job, Mr. I mean, there's no point at which he actually calls attention to it as opposed to in other cases. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going
to
say that I think that's probably because guys don't care about clothes as much as they care about having the coolest pen in the world, the Mont Blanc pen, or like having the coolest watch in the world or the coolest car. It's like all that James Bond marketing stuff is like aimed at dudes who want to buy things to become as cool as James Bond.
Well, the clothes would be part of that, though.
Yeah, but I'm not going to buy a tuxedo. What am I going to wear that around? Can't just wear that around. Well, but I can pull out my Mont Blanc pen at any time and go, here's my phone number. Let me sign my number with a Mont Blanc pen. Oh, what time is it, huh? James Bond was watch will tell me. Time to go to my apartment. Like, that's, you know, that's about being cool, man.
It's about being cool, man.
Well, one of the most interesting things I read about product placement was Apple. Like, the fact that they do not really ever pay for any kind of product.
Right. They don't give you free product either.
No, they apparently do. I was reading that is one, or at least they have. Like Mission Impossible, that was sort of the trade-off. Is like, we're not going to pay to have Apple prominently in the movie, but we're going to give you a bunch of stuff, so we're making it easy for you to. But, you know, I was reading that in 2011, Apple products were in 891 TV shows. Like that, I mean, it's everywhere. And I kind of thought about that too, where like Apple, like, if you're a big enough product, you just don't have to pay for it.
Sure. You don't need it. No.
I think actually this goes back to the point that Wendy was trying to make before, which is that the time in which product placement feels like it's not obnoxious is when it makes sense narratively.
Yes.
Where if someone's going to be on a computer, as opposed to when they're too cheap to pay for a product, they have like the fake Microsoft or the fake Apple.
Right.
And you're sort of like, come on. Like, you could have just ponied up and actually gotten the rights to it. But you're going to try to pass this off as like.
Or put tape over the logo. I know that's a MacBook. I have one. I have two, actually. Just show the fucking Apple.
Interestingly, when you put tape over a logo, it's called Greeking it. And I'm Greek.
Oh, yeah, so interesting. Why is it come
from? I don't know, but that's what they call it on set.
That sounds racist.
I'd be offended by that.
I guess you
got to get to the bottom of that.
Now
talk to your Greek sources.
I am offended by it.
Yeah.
I wasn't before.
I do like this. So I'm looking at the list. I think, Margaret, you put this together, right? Mm-hmm. A list of interesting product placement examples from previous movies. Like, did FedEx, did their business go up after Castaway? Even though it's
Yes.
Okay.
They got increased brand recognition in places like Asia that they didn't really have much before, but they didn't pay for it. So that was just a freebie for them.
And really, M&M's fucked up with E.T. Like,
Oh,
how
I know.
They, how do they let Reese's Pieces, which are a
what
trash
Oliver's
candy,
referring to is the
is
fact
trash
that
candy.
Trash candy.
No, 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 it is not. I love Reese's Pieces.
You still eat them now?
Yes.
Reese's the peanut butter cups are good, but the pieces are trash. All right. But anyways, go
things
ahead.
Things have gotten negative here.
No, you had a story about this though.
I was just going to say that M&M's was supposed to be the original candy that E.T. was into. They did not want to do it for some reason, and so it got offered to Reese's Pieces, which was still a pretty new product. And Hershey's got to just take off their product from that.
Apparently the family that owns M&M is like very private, very secretive. I'm guessing that maybe at the time they weren't into like
aliens fingering their product.
Yes.
Well, when you put it like that, Whopper. Okay,
damn it.
You're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this.
This is Chris from Springfield, Illinois. I listen to Bullseye because sometimes I need something that can make me laugh, teach me, and then leave me feeling totally amazed.
I'm Jesse Thorne. I'll talk to comedian Todd Glass about his memoir, The Todd Glass Situation, and I'll also sit down with Raffi, a beloved children's performer, on the next Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Margaret Wappler. With me in the studio are
Winter Mitchell,
Asterios Coconuts,
and Oliver Wang.
Every week on Pop Rocket, we ask the panel, what's your current jam? Winter, what is it?
So it was my birthday this weekend, which is one of those...
Happy birthday.
Thank you, baby. Yes, thank you. Birthday. I love you guys. Thank you. I'm happy to be here with you all post that trauma. So I was with, some of my best friends in San Francisco, whom I love and cherish. They made me cioppino and garlic bread and brought me a Boston cream pie, which is my least favorite cake, but I'm not going to, hold it against you. You didn't ask, and you just assumed, and that's all right. It makes an ass out of you and me.
You guys kind
of
messed up.
But we spent the evening, really lovely evening. The Super Bowl was in town, and it was, whatever. But there was a concert at AT&T Park, and it was Metallica, and you can hear it from my buddy's house, and it was just a really quaint, fun weekend.
Remind people of the tattoo you have that ties into Metallica.
Well, I have a Metallica tattoo, and it says Seek and Destroy, when the song is called Search and Destroy, but I'm like, ooh. Seek and Destroy, it doesn't matter. It doesn't fucking matter. He says Seek and Destroy at some point in the song.
Seems like you're justifying a lot.
No, I just love Metallica, and I'm being thorough.
Sure.
Thorough.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, because it was my birthday, we kind of kept it chill, and I'm usually known for, having super supreme blowouts, but I just wanted to chill this weekend. And we listened to Earth, Wind, and Fire on Pandora, which was just beautiful to listen to, and obviously Maurice White and Oliver's going to touch on that. R.I.P. And then we also listened to Teddy Pendergrass, Pandora Station, at the same time, and it was just... And that and Fleetwood Mac and Tom Petty, and it was just like perfect. And this song came on, and when it came on, I was really stifling tears because I was surrounded by people that I love more than anything. And I've known for since I was 19 years old, and I just turned 36, and it was just like, whoa, here's age. And so this is called The Gift of Life by Teddy Pendergrass.
Oh, I treasure it above everything. This gift.
I just want to thank everybody who wished me happy birthday on the Facebook group. And, I like the wonderful gift of life.
And I can take it or leave it.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
The song.
It's not for everyone.
Song.
It's not for everyone.
The song's great.
You're no longer invited.
I'm just saying. I'm still deciding.
Asterios, what's your jam?
I have been listening to Armed Forces on repeat for months and months. It's an Elvis Costello album. And, I was always like an Elvis Costello hits guy.
Yeah.
I owned My Aim Is True and a lot of the hits, but... But I found it on Google Play for like $4. And I was like, well, I
can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, I was like, I got to finally own
it. Torrent it. Jesus Christ.
I don't like to steal. I'm an artist.
All right, okay.
I make
respect. I like that.
I have, because I want people to pay me for my garbage.
And you're serious about your shit, Erica Badu.
I try to be. Badu for life. Mm-hmm. So, so yeah, but I bought it, and there's all these crazy songs I've never heard before, because every single song on this album could and probably was like a hit at the time, but I was just unaware of it. And so I want to play this song, Goon Squad. It's like the rockin'est, coolest song ever.
You know that novel, Welcome to the Goon Squad?
No.
Jennifer Egan, like, you should go read this
book. Because
it's all about rock and roll.
Cool.
But it makes me wonder if she stole the title from the song. Mm. I got a jam for you guys. It's Wild Nothing's Reich Pop. Wild Nothing is this band that's been around for like 4 or 5 albums now. And, you know, when we were talking about the quadrants on our secret show, I was talking about things that I like to write to. And Wild Nothing is definitely on my list that I can, like, it's one of those things I can listen to as either wallpaper or front and center, because there's always like texture to it and things that pop and get my attention. But it also can like fade into the background. And I think the singer slash just main creator of the band, Jack Tatum, has a really like beautiful voice, and he's working all these kind of like 80s, I don't know, like Peter Gabriel kind of situations on this song. So let's hear a little bit of this. I am the silent sun. Ooh. That's very Peter Gabriel. Let me just say, too, to Justin Timberlake, you're not the only one who can use marimbas in your songs right now, okay? Like, here it is, front and center.
Share the marimba.
So, Oliver, take us into Bay's formation.
So, I have two songs. The first, and this goes to what Winter just mentioned a moment ago, is let's start with Ramsey Lewis's featuring Earth, Wind, and Fire, Sun Goddess.
Very Bay.
It's such a sunny, funky, like, you know what I mean? It's like positive funk.
It is. It's the sun goddess.
I mean,
so this is Ramsey Lewis, and it's really an Earth, Wind, and Fire song that happens to feature Ramsey Lewis, even though it's credited to Lewis. We just recorded our grief episode not that long ago, and one of the observations we made during it is that we're now entering into a cycle demographically where a lot of the kind of cultural heroes and the people that we're passionate about are going to be passing away. And then less than 2 weeks later, Maurice White, founded Earth, Wind, and Fire, one of the most important successful funk bands of the 1970s, passes away at the age of, I think, 74, 75. So again, it's just like, it's another one. Like, this is going to happen every week. But, you know, for Maurice in particular, and the reason why I picked this song is, you know, he got his start in Chicago as a drummer recording for Cadet, which is how he first met Ramsey Lewis, because he used to play drums in Lewis's band. And then after Earth, Wind, and Fire, like, blew the F up in the mid-1970s, him and his band were coming back from a show at Madison Square Garden. He calls up Lewis and says, look, we'll stop and tell. Why don't we record something together? What do you got? And Sun Goddess was one of the songs that came out of it. So it was it began as kind of a whisper of an idea by Lewis, but it's White who basically fleshed it out. You know, I think 90% of the people playing on the song are in Earth, Wind, and Fire. Then Lewis is playing keyboard on there as well. And then it would go on to become one of Ramsey Lewis's most successful albums, if not the most successful album he ever put out. So, I mean, the catalog that White left behind in terms of the songs that he produced, wrote, not just with Earth, Wind, and Fire, but beyond that, I mean, it's so enormous. His catalog is incredible. So just wanted to kind of pay respect to him. But for this week, going out off of a powerful, positive note, we have to get into Formation.
Yeah.
And let's listen to Beyoncé with Formation.
Paparazzi catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama.
It's so Southern black. That's what's so fucking amazing about it.
It's,
you know, like her calling in her own family lineage.
Yes.
Beyonce, thank you. God, if you ever listen to this, you won't. I hope you do. You probably should. I actually sent it to your publicist. I probably will tomorrow.
Yeah, let's get this to her.
We
yeah.
will. Yeah. Like, thank you. Like, just thank you.
I don't understand why people are criticizing her for using the word Negro in this song. Like, do you know what I mean?
Because
it's she's trying to use it in a certain way that's like calling in these lineages, you
know? Low-key, black people call each other Negro. And that's just, I'm going to let you in on something.
When we're just telling the secrets now.
I'm just telling you secrets. If you want a black secret show, we can do a bonus episode.
And I'll speak in a high key. People want to criticize her to get attention for themselves. I'm Morrissey, cultural critic Morrissey. It's just, look, they just want to get on TV and scream.
Can we have you guest as critical Morrissey in falsetto?
Of course you can.
Next season on Maximum Fun, we have Critical Morrissey.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with what she's saying. She's not saying anything.
Right. No, but there doesn't have to be anything wrong with what she's saying to get attention for it. Yeah. It's
she drowned a police car. She drowned a police car. That sold.
And then she made all those SWAT team members put their guns down and dance with that little kid.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great stuff in this video, but what I'm saying is like, the truth is irrelevant. It's like, it's can you score media off it on the other side? Can you get attention for yourself by attacking it? And a lot of people did.
But the thing is like,
it's shameful.
Guess what? The narrative that we were working with, Trump, and then that ridiculous, we didn't even talk about that stupid ass walkout from the GOP debate.
What?
Where they didn't even hear their name.
Oh my God, that was so
hilarious.
How you
not
going
to hear your name when it's time to walk out?
That was amazing, actually. Amazing. That was amazing. Amazing.
That's literally, to me, the equivalent of misspelling a word you've been studying for weeks at the spelling bee.
Right.
Okay. Did the Marco Rubio robot walk out at the right time?
He knew exactly.
I think he might have. But
Ben
Carson took an L on that one. Carson took an L. Yeah.
Poor guy.
All right, you've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Margaret Wappler, with Winter Mitchell, Oliver Wang, and our special guest, Asterios...
Kokonos. Good enough.
All right. Asterios, what do you got going on?
Well, I'm a comedian, and you can follow me at Asterios. It's spelled A-S-T-E-R-I-O-S on Twitter. And I'll tell you what shows I'm doing there. And I work with America's only humor publishing company. We're called Devastator Press. We're putting out a bunch of comedy books this year. We're the only company in the country, I think in the world, that only puts out comedy books. So you can go to devastatorpress.com to see our titles. And if you got a couple extra bucks, go to devastatorpress.com/Mega Man 2 and pick up a copy of my book, The Enemies of 20-something Mega Man. In this comic book, Mega Man fights all the assholes that we met in Los Angeles in our 20s, like Couch Surfing Man, Nonchalant Cocaine Use Man.
I know that person.
Yeah, way too hardcore about Karaoke Man.
Oh, Lord.
And Mega Man will show you how to beat them all. And so again, you go to devastatorpress.com/Mega Man 2. Digital copies are only $1.
Amazing.
I wanted to say I love the ballsiness of just claiming that Twitter handle of your first name, because everyone else named Asterios out there, I'm assuming there's like tens of hundreds of thousands of Greek people with that. They're like, fuck. Yeah. I can't use that now because someone took
that. Guy got there first.
Yeah, nice job.
All right, thanks Asterios. Thanks for being here, too.
This was fun.
You're amazing.
By the way, guys, our bonus mailbag episode is up now, and donors are going to get a secret link.
Ooh.
Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Just want to say that Guy Branum is not able to be with us this week, and we want to say that we love you, Guy. We're thinking about you. Guy right now is with his family. A family loss happened, and he's there in Northern California with them, and we miss him and love him and hope he's doing okay.
Love you, Guy.
You're the best, Guy.
Thanks to Grew Up with Brady's, Dr. Worm 73, and Keckberg for the 5-star reviews in iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. Get in touch with us on Twitter at Pop Rocket. Join our Facebook group. This week, tell us, what is your favorite film character played by a black actor slash actress that doesn't fit in with the typical tropes? We're a production of MaximumFun.org, and our producers are the very kind Charles Shaw-pouring Christian Duenas and Colin Anderson.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.